Hello, yeah, hello Mahima. First, thank you that you have the time to have an interview with me for Jetzt TV, Hier Now TV. You are in Switzerland, I'm at La Gomera, but I have the chance to interview you in this way. I don't know much about you, so maybe we can start with your name. What does your name Mahima mean, and where did you get this name from?
I got this name in Pune, and it was after Osho. So what I mean is, he had already passed away from he had left the body, and I was in Pune. That was my experience, my first experience of meditation, and I took sannyas. And got this name, and it means Prem Mahima, actually, so it's a double name, Prem Mahima, and they told me it means Majesty of Love. So I just decided to go with the simple Mahima, in which case it means Majesty.
Yeah, nice.
But I feel the love still there. I know it's there, so I still, you know, don't use the whole name because it's very long. And I think Prem is very known, so Mahima is a bit more unique, I think.
Okay. What was your age when you came to Pune?
I was 23 years old. And I'm 43 this year. I'll be 43 this year. So some time ago.
Yes, and how did it came? You were attracted of Osho, or your friends told you about it, or how did...
A friend told me about it. I never heard anything about meditation. I had no idea about ashrams or even India, thinking of going to India, because I'm from Zimbabwe, from Africa, and nobody goes to India from the people I know. And so it was through that I started to travel a bit, and I met a guy in Miami, and he was sannyasin, and that's how he told me, you know, I should go there. And I thought, why not? So I jumped on a plane and went to India.
And how was the experience? What did you feel there? What was important for you?
It completely transformed my life. I went from being a kind of 23-year-old who, I had been divorced at that time, already. I had known a lot of pain, a lot of sadness, and I went from being in that state of mind to feeling deep joy and profound freedom from my suffering within one session of the White Robe Brotherhood. So it was a powerful experience for me, arriving in Pune and having that experience. And then I was so excited about what had happened in that one meeting that I obviously decided I have to stay here longer until I find out more about this Osho guy, more about this meditation and what all this is about. So that's how my journey started.
And what did you find out?
Well, I found out that we can live peacefully and joyfully in the now. That is a choice that we can make by realizing who we are beyond the ego and the mind. So we have this side of ourselves which most people are not conscious that there is more to them than their mind and their body. So that's what I discovered. I discovered my spiritual side, but not connected to God or Jesus like I had been brought up with this philosophy, and it hadn't brought me to this depth of knowledge and understanding of real joy. So that's what I discovered. I discovered a door opened and a new world, inner world, was revealed to me. And in that world, I felt safe. I felt the world was friendly. I felt connected to everything around me. And I felt happy, just really simple, just felt real joy to be alive. So yeah, that's pretty much what I discovered.
And how was the connection to Osho? You felt him as an energy, or you had feelings or emotion about his personality, or what was the connection to Osho?
That is a really, a really good question. And I have to, because it's 20 years ago, I have to remember. He was the most intensive, profound person I'd ever met until that moment. Like, but I didn't meet him because I just saw him on the video screen. But how he was talking, what he was saying, the energy he was emanating, it was riveting. It just stopped me, and I was like, wow, who is this? So yes, his personality definitely made a big impression on me, and I could understand almost immediately why all these people were adoring him and so into his ashram and into everything that was going on there. So I pretty much, in the first evening, got a lot where I saw, wow, this is a special guy. Certainly the most special person I've met, even though I was meeting him personally, until that point in my life.
I'm sure you did also the meditation there. So what was it, meditation with movement, like the dynamic meditation or Kundalini meditation, or more the silent meditation? What did attract you most, and what did happen in the meditation for you?
Okay, that, you know, I actually, from the very first evening, I started to meditate. Like the next day after I had this profound awakening, I started to meditate on my own. And I would wake up in the morning and I would sit for 2 hours. And then I'd go to the ashram and I would take part I worked in the kitchen, so I would help. That was not immediately, that was after some weeks I'd been there. I got myself a job in the kitchen because I love cooking and I'm very passionate about cooking. So at one point I was cooking in the kitchen, and then I also would meditate alone for 2 hours in the evening. And then I would take part, not in the evening, actually at sunset time. And then after that, I would go to the White Robe Brotherhood meeting. So mostly I took part in the discourses, the evening discourses. I did this 4 hours of meditation on my own, almost from the next day. And I worked in the kitchen and I took part in just enjoying the ashram and meeting people. So many different types of people from all over the world. I'd never seen anything like it in my whole life. So the whole experience was just completely mind-blowing to me.
Meditation, what does it mean for you? Just to close the eyes and to look inside, or does it mean to watch the breath, or sometimes this and sometimes that? What does it mean for you?
For me personally, meditation means living in the moment. So everything what you do, every minute of the day, it is meditation. Whether you are cooking dinner or doing something else, you know, in the garden or having fun with your friends. It's being in the here and now. That is meditation. Most people think about meditation as the actual act of sitting. And that's where you start. You start there. You start to connect to this moment, to this inner joy and peace and love. And then from there, that becomes a lifestyle. That becomes who you are. So it's not like, now I'm meditating, now I'm not meditating. So that's what meditation means to me. I hope that is clear enough for you.
Yes, it is clear, but I have more questions about it. To be in the moment, what does it mean exactly? For me, it's to be in the moment, just it means to feel what I'm feeling, to have the sensations, and just there is everything in the moment. But sometimes when I'm hanging to my thoughts, when I give them too much energy, and I'm there is so much thinking, then it's in a way a drifting away from the moment. How do you would describes it?
I would describe being in the moment is just being aware of yourself as more than the mind body. So just being conscious of whatever is going on, wherever you are and whatever you're doing, whether your mind is silent or active or quiet, or whether your emotions are joyful or sad or whatever is going on, that you're present with that, and you're not trying to escape either into the past with wondering, so much about what's happened or so much about what's going on in the future, that you just can be with yourself in each moment as you are. So that's what being in the moment means to me. Just being present here in each moment, fully engaged with my whole being in whatever it is that is happening in my life, for example, because that's part of being in the moment. You're alive, you're in this physical body, you're taking part in life and in whatever situation you're dealing with, and each moment offers a new experience, whatever that experience may be. So that's kind of how I feel being in the moment.
And how about the thoughts? They are just coming like clouds and going away, or how you deal with the thoughts?
Okay, I believe that we don't have to focus on thoughts. Like, if we talk about meditation, you know, if you would come to, let's say, one of my meditation classes, I tell people, do not focus on thinking or trying to stop thinking. Because thoughts, basically, they come out of nothing and they go back to nothing. What you need to do is focus on what you're feeling. And there's only two ways to feel. You either feel good in some way, different levels of good, of course. There's I feel okay, I feel amazing, I feel so much bliss. And then you feel not so good. There's, I feel really uncomfortable, I feel angry, I feel frustrated, I feel sad. So you only have two options. You just, either you're feeling good or you're not feeling good. And if you focus and try to find out, what am I feeling in this moment? What do I feel? And try to feel a little bit better. So if you don't feel so good, try to shift and adjust your focus to just feel a little bit more relaxed, a little bit more open, a little bit more loving. And you want to just increase your feelings of positivity. Because when you feel good and you feel really happy and amazing, your thoughts don't bother you. They inspire you. You get ideas, you get insights. You enjoy your mind. It's part of the human body, it's part of the experience of being in the human body to have this mind. It's one of our greatest assets, actually. So thinking only bothers us when we're not feeling good and we can't stop the negative thoughts which arise from negative feelings. Because if you feel good, you don't have these kind of thoughts, and thinking doesn't bother you. So it's very important to, like, if I could put it in a more simple term, is to increase your positive ball of energy and decrease your focus on your negative ball. So that's what, like, developing yourself in meditation is just about, being able to expand your ability to be positive and just decrease and minimize the negativity, the negative feelings, so that you feel most of the time good, maybe great, maybe amazing, and sometimes you feel not so good. So this is the direction which I take people when I work with them with meditation.
Does that mean that there is bliss always available, that it is what is real, what is life?
I think that when you're willing to know the truth on a deeper level beyond your mind, yes, bliss becomes available to you on a very frequent basis. So what I mean by know who you are is to know that your body is a temporary, it's holding something else. So you can call that your, the source, God, love, chi energy, Shakti, Kundalini. There's different names that people try to describe what this body is holding. And if you can get in touch with that, if you can know that beyond any doubt, to know I am not just this physical body, then everything that happens to the physical body is not that important. So if you feel if something bad happens, so what? If something good happens, that's fine too. You take life as it comes, and things come and go, and you stay with that which remains, which is your the source energy, and you stay with that. So I feel that bliss can become available when you know this, not on an intellectual level, but like on a level where you can't even describe it to a person. It's just a knowing that is beyond the normal words, what we know when we think of this word knowing. It's something deeper.
The usual state of the people is that they think they are an ego. They identify with their experiences and they make a story out of this from the past. How real for you is the ego, or what does it is in your, how would you call it, describe it?
This is a wonderful question. You know, the ego is as real as the world. So how real is the stars or the moon or the lakes or people? That is as real as the ego is. So it is a part of us that belongs to the world. It is my physical body. It is what this, it is everything that, that when I say mine, I, the world, that is the ego. So yes, the ego is as real as everything you see around you in this world.
And if you, I see everything as an illusion, then also the ego is an illusion.
Exactly, exactly. If you see everything as if this world is a dream state from which you can wake up from. So we are, it's like, we think it's real, but actually the fact that we will die proves that this is not a real permanent state. So if you can let go of this identification with the I, then you're free. The ego can do whatever it does, and you can sit back, relax, and enjoy the movie.
So you have been with Osho, but you also went to Papaji, is this right?
Yes, I did. I was with Papaji after 6 months in the Pune ashram. I went over to see Papaji because I wanted to know what it is, what is enlightenment in the physical form. Because at the Osho ashram, Osho wasn't there anymore. There was nobody claiming to be enlightened at the time that I was there. There was nobody saying, well, I'm awake too. So I felt like, I'm awake too, but what does that mean? So I need to find somebody in his physical body so I can learn from him, look at him, observe him, and know what is this enlightenment really mean for a human being. So that was my pull to try to find a life teacher.
And what did you find out?
I found out that there is always a personality in every human being. And for me, Papaji and Osho too had their ego. Because the ego for me is the human body. And the human body takes part in the experience of life. And that means different things happen. You have to evolve your body or your human nature has to kind of learn and evolve. So you're a different person when you're 42 years old. You're a different person when you're 23. You're a different person with 80. And at each level, you've got to kind of learn the personality that it has to kind of learn and expand to grow into that time in your life. So for me, Papaji was a wonderful mirror in just showing me that you are that infinite nothingness, but you're also Mahima. You're also a human being. You're also a person. And whatever is related to that, you will have to go through it, and you will have to experience it, and there's no escaping from the fact that you are a woman, and you will have to deal with all that. And that's what I saw in Papaji. I saw that he was a man, as well as he was this infinite nothingness and this wonderful light and shiny being. He was also a man. And he had also, from what I could see, made, let's call them mistakes, or had situations or problems or things in his life where you would go, what's going on there? What's that about? And I feel Osho, too, had, if you look at his life, also created some interesting situations through the decisions that he took. Because at the end of the day, we're responsible for the decisions we take. So if you decide to do something, there are certain effects from that decision, and you have to deal with it in your life. So that's what I learned. I learned that it is not, there's no thing, that you're not beyond being a human when you awaken. It doesn't take you beyond being a human. You will still have to, you know, take part in human activities. To whatever degree you choose to.
And you become even more individual, because it's very clear and poor what you are.
That can be, yes, that can absolutely be, because you get more clear, that's for sure. You become more clear about what you want, where you want to be, what you want to be doing. So there's a lot of like doubts, self-doubts, lack of confidence, which is going away, you know, more and more and more, I find.
How is your experience now? A lot of people tell that their experience of enlightenment become deeper and deeper by the time, that the experience is always deepening, that it never ends. Could you say this from you out as well?
I would say that. I might just slightly put it in a different language. I would say you continuously learning in this life. You're continuously learning and you're continuously discovering. And that's the beauty, that it never ends. There's no end to learning and discovering. But mainly it's because you are still in the human form. And so as long as you're still in the human form, you have to keep learning and deepening and expanding. So yes, life definitely for me is becoming easier and easier and easier. I'm understanding more about how to be in this world with this awakened state. Because that was the biggest challenge. I think the awakening itself, everybody can awaken very quickly and very easily. But to stay committed to that and to be able to bring that essence into every single day of your life, that becomes the challenge. So, and if you look at people like Osho and like Papaji, they had their experiences and they gave this the utmost importance in their life. It became the most important thing to them. They didn't start to be distracted with other things. They were passionate, and every single day they either were talking about it or trying to hang out with people who had what they wanted. So they put themselves into the situation where they could keep on growing, keep on learning, to the point where they were able to then start to teach and help others. So it is that fire to prioritize this in your life that I think makes a big difference?
At the moment, for you, the energy of Osho and Papaji, they are still alive for you, or they are not so important anymore?
For me, I was never separated. I never felt separate from Papaji and Osho. Like, we were always one. So that, yes, they are alive, because I'm alive. So I always never saw them as something separate from myself. They were showing me myself, and so that's alive and well, and yeah, there's no separation for me between me and them, and I don't think of them as something separate from me, so they cannot be not with me.
And when you when you meet people who have also been with Osho or Papaji, there is a connection then with them, or it depends to whom this is?
I don't think so much anymore about whether a person has been with Osho or Papaji or with the Dalai Lama or with Jesus Christ in the church. Or I just meet people and try to share joy and peace and love. So wherever they come from, whatever their background, I've come to realize that there is no difference between any person, a person who has deeply been with Osho and someone who's never been with Osho, in terms of their connection to me and to spirit and to love. There is no difference.
How does your life look now? You are living in Switzerland, in Zurich, is this right? Or?
I'm living in Baar, actually. It's near Zug, so it's a little village near Zug. We moved here about 2 or 3 months ago, and I live here with my husband, and we've been together for 14 years now, and I do regular sessions here in Zurich, meditation, and also retreats. And we are basically, he's working with me now, and already, like, America is way ahead of Europe in terms of bringing meditation or consciousness, self-awareness, whatever you want to call it, to places where it wouldn't otherwise go. So, for example, Time magazine recently had on the front page a picture, an article about meditation. So meditation is moving out of the, you know, alternative, very few people know and think about it. It's slowly moving into the mainstream. And I want to be a part of that journey of taking meditation into businesses, making people realize that it's 70% of the time you spend in your life is in your work environment. And so if you can bring people there to be more conscious, to be more compassionate, kind, loving, patient with themselves, and therefore with the other people, you will create more productivity, and the more less stressed and more happy people are, they just function better. And you can just think about yourself. When you feel great, you work and you do things just better. And when you feel depressed and sad, you just don't do anything as well as when you're feeling good. So it's very simple. The philosophy is very simple. But it's still going to take a little time for people in Europe to catch up with the fact that they should be offering this, like they already do with yoga and with massage. They offer this to their employees. We hope to be able to get more and more businesses bringing meditation into something, a common thing that they offer their workers on a weekly basis. So that's what we're aiming at. We have our company, Love Silence, and we're trying to build that up. And I also have my sister here in Switzerland. I'm very fortunate. She's the closest relative from me that's still around, because my mom passed away and my dad disappeared when I was young. So my sister, it's just the two of us, and she's also here in Switzerland, so I'm very blessed to have a very strong relationship with her, and I get to hang out with her as well. So that's our life right now. We're looking at being able to do more traveling in the next upcoming months and years. But yeah, that's the basic picture at the moment.
You are now a master of meditation. What means master of meditation? That you can bring meditation to people and learn them how to meditate? Is that what means a master of meditation?
I say a master of meditation because I have spent so many hours in meditation. I believe I can help people to understand the benefits of meditation, to understand that they don't have to be afraid, because it's different things that can happen to you when you go deeper in deep meditation. Your life is changing. You things that didn't mean anything to you anymore is falling away from you. Everything what is not true and honest just falls away from you. So it's a very transformative energy, and I believe that I can help people, especially people who think I could never meditate. I have surprised them. They've come to my class and gone, I can't believe this. That was so easy. And I think, of course it's easy. It's your being. It's who you are. It's what you were born with this inside of you. And you just got some wrong ideas, and there's a lot of, sadly, a lot of wrong ideas about meditation out there. You know, and that's why I specifically said in the beginning that meditation is simply the willingness to be in the moment and to know yourself beyond the ego and the mind. And so when you do that, you get in touch with something so powerfully beautiful that you want to have more of that, you want to taste more of that. But that process is very gentle, and there doesn't need to be a struggle, and there doesn't need to be a fight. Because for me, that was my experience. I never struggled. I mean, can you imagine going from never meditating a day or even a minute in my life to meditating on my own for 4 hours a day, 2 hours in the morning and 2 hours in the evening? It was effortless. It was effortless, and it was joyful. I loved it. It was just being within that essence. And so I want to show other people the same, that it doesn't have to be a struggle. It doesn't have to be a fight. If you have the right attitude, you can go very far, very quickly with meditation. So that's why I can consider myself a meditation master, because I think I can really help, and I am helping people to make very fast progress in their personal development. Even people who have been on the journey for a long time have come, and I can't believe how much progress I've made in this short time, because they just dropped the idea, the simple idea, that it is something difficult, it is something only for few rare special people, and all this kind of thinking, which I think the spiritual scene has a lot of this limited belief system, that is people, oh, Osho, oh, Papaji, we can't be like them. They were one of a kind. And that makes the people inferior, and they put the master high. And as long as you do this, you're never going to have the freedom that you want. You're gonna have to have yourself as that, you're gonna have to raise yourself and look at the masters and let them be a mirror to you. And that is what's going to liberate you and make you know what they know without a doubt in your mind.
Can you give us an example of your practical work? For example, like some owner of a company is coming to you and says, okay, I want that my workers become more happy, more meditative. What will you do? You will speak to the people, or yes?
You know, see what the requirement of the company is, what are the dynamics. Like, try to find out what are the issues within the company. Like, for example, maybe they want to work a bit more with the management, with leadership, like getting the people who are in charge to be able to be more honest, more transparent, and be better leaders for the team, because leadership is very important. If the leaders are not doing what they expect the other people to do, it's not a good example. So you need to build leadership. So that's, for example, something we could work with. If one says, okay, I just see that there is not a good energy in the office, like you can, I mean, we're all aware, even the people who've never meditated are conscious of walking into a place and feeling, ugh, the energy here sucks, the mood isn't right. So this is something like we can work with the attitudes of the people to improve the energy and the dynamics between people. So I would have to know what the company is all about, what the dynamics are, to be able to offer them a tailor-made program which could be interesting for them. But I definitely always incorporate speaking with people, because I think people need to hear new ideas, different ways of thinking and feeling about certain things that they've been looking at it from this angle the whole time, and say, what about if you look at it from this angle, and this angle is more empowering to you and to your employees? So I think changing perspectives through dialogue is extremely important, and then of course doing the actual meditation, getting people to just sit down, breathe deeply, and start to feel that they are, get them in touch with the fact that they can control if they want to feel good or if they want to feel bad. But this is in their hands. They can do this through actively meditating and choosing to focus on relaxation, being more open-minded, being more loving, being more generous. So this like compassion meditation, there is a forgiveness meditation. There's ways of which to do meditation, which can be, in very simple terms, that many more people can start to see the benefit and understand. So I would use every tool I have in my toolkit.
And what is the feedback you get often, maybe?
I have been getting very good feedback. As I said, most of the time people are extremely surprised at how easy meditation actually is. That's one of the main feedbacks that most people are like, oh my God, I didn't realize this was so easy. And I said, yes, if you have the right teacher and the right guidance, it should be effortless. You know, the struggle and the fight, this is just what we're used of, what the ego is used of in life. But when you get to work with the heart, it's really quite effortless and it's really quite simple. Obviously, you get some people or some individuals that are not so much in the heart vibration, and maybe you have to work a little bit harder with them. But most of the time, more and more people are just stunned at how effortless the process can actually be.
And your groups for private people for meditation, how does they work?
Well, I have like an initial session, which is a 2-hour session where I meet somebody and we talk for an hour. I explain them what I like, the style of meditation I do, and then we actually do an hour of meditation. So if someone would come for a private session, that's what they can expect the first time they come, to have a 2-hour session where we have 1 hour dialogue and then we have 1 hour of meditation. And then if they want to continue, but I really, with private sessions, it has to really feel 100% like someone is really ready to make some transformations in their life. Because some people don't want to do the work. They want someone to do the work for them. They want someone to think for them. And that's why maybe they want a healer, or they want to go somewhere where they can just lie down and relax. That's not the way I work. I really feel like you need to shake yourself and you need to really get straight and get honest if you want to transform your life using meditation, using this knowledge, you have to have a fire, a deep fire, a big bonfire burning, where you say, I've had enough of my life, of my behavior, of the way I've been up to this point, and I'm ready to do something to make a massive difference in my life. So I think when someone is fired up, then I'm the person. And even if they're not fired up, I can get them fired up. So it's no problem as well. But it's an important thing, and I think also on the spiritual journey, to keep that intensity and never lose that spirit of being enthusiastic about learning and growing. Because I think some people become complacent on the spiritual journey, and they lose faith. They think, you know, I've been doing this for years, and I still feel this stuff and negativity, and then they get disappointed. You know, but most of it is just about not knowing how to bring that energy into the daily life, like to merge your spiritual awakening with your day-to-day life. And this is my work. What I'm really excited about is to try to help people make that connection. Even people who just come to meditation for the first time, really get them to see that just with a few adjustments in your daily life, you can make big differences to how you feel every day.
Is there gratefulness in your life?
Every day. It's one of the most powerful things I work with on a daily basis. Every single day I think, what a lucky, blessed person I am. Because I think most people are not able to see themselves. Like, I see myself, I'm here, I'm sitting here in this chair, I'm sitting here in Switzerland, but I'm also connected to the whole world around me. So even somebody who's sitting somewhere else in the world, who has nothing, has no chair to sit on, has no food to eat, I'm aware of that person even while I'm sitting here. I'm connected to the world around me. So gratitude becomes effortless when you have that kind of peripheral vision, that you're not seeing yourself from the narrow perspective. You're seeing yourself in the whole world, and it's easy to just wake up every day and go, thank you. Thank you so much for everything I have.
You nowadays are still going for a visit to Africa?
I haven't been to Africa for a long time, and I'm looking forward to take my husband there very soon. So I haven't been there since my mom died in 97, so this is quite a long time. I felt like I know Africa, I was brought up there, and I still had to visit the world and experience the world. But very soon I'm longing to go back there, actually. So I'm going to make that happen, hopefully soon, in the next year at least.
Okay. And you feel at home in Switzerland?
I feel at home wherever I am. So yeah, I do feel at home in Switzerland. I mean, it's taken me just a few years, I think. It's taken me some time to adjust to European culture and life, because before that I was living in Africa, I lived in Asia, I lived in India, I was traveling all over the world, and I met Europeans in those places, but that's a different atmosphere. But when you're in Europe and it's cold and it's a special atmosphere in this winter time, summertime completely different, you could be anywhere. But in the winter, it is a special atmosphere that, as an African girl, it takes a little bit of time to adjust to this. But I'm adjusted now. I'm well adjusted. Yeah.
You were talking about meditation becoming part of the mainstream. how far we already in this way? We just in the beginning, or we are in the middle of this way for meditation to become mainstream? What is your feeling?
That's such a wonderful and good question. I think that around the world it's different. Like, I think in like America, they are ahead of this thing. They're already doing big companies, many people are recognizing and doing much more. And then I think in Europe, we are definitely still somewhere at the beginning. And in Africa, I guess they're even more behind than the beginning. So so I think there are, it depends on where you are on the globe, in terms of actual people getting enthusiastic about meditation. I would say we're at different stages in different places of the globe. But for sure, as a world in general, the language of meditation, the language of truth, is already being spoken widely. Because I remember when I started in 1993 at the Osho Ashram, one of the most difficult things after my awakening was when I went back to Zimbabwe, people didn't really know what I was talking about. When I was speaking a foreign language to them when I talked about knowing yourself beyond the ego, find out, get in touch with your real self, your inner potential. Now they have slightly different words. They would say full potential, for example, instead of, the self, get in touch with the self. They might use the word inner potential. Instead of meditation, they might say mindfulness. But so they're speaking the same language, and everybody, everywhere I go, people understand and they get excited. Like you can, even if they're not going to do anything with it, even if they're not for it, even if they're not like agreeing with you, it's a conversation people are having that we all need to dig a little bit deeper and find a bit more truth in how we're living our daily life. So that's something really wonderful that we've already made quite a lot of progress on that level, that the conversation is there, but now to really get the practical, that where people are actually doing it and taking part in meditation, that for sure is going to take a little bit more time.
So Mahima, you have also written a book and published a book. Can you please speak about it? What's the title and what's about?
Yes, I am very blessed to have finally got my book ready. And it is in two languages, English and German. And the German book is called Love Silence. And it is about my personal journey and my teachings or my ideas how people can make a faster progress in liberating themselves from the limiting feelings of the negative mind and ego. So it is just, I also wanted to write a spiritual book that is very simple, that people from whatever age or whatever level of spirituality could read easily and get knowledge out of. Because it has been my experience that sometimes the language used in spiritual books are so complex that it's hard for normal people to understand exactly what is trying to be said. So I wanted to write a book that would demystify that language and make those wonderful philosophies so simple that even the most person who doesn't know much about spirituality and philosophies like Advaita Vedanta and teachings of Ramana and all these great masters, that to speak a language which was simple that many more people could understand. So that's what I tried to accomplish in my book, and I apparently did quite a good job because I'm getting very good feedback about how simple it is and yet very relevant for many people.
So there is in your book a part where you practically describe how to do meditation, how to get into meditation?
Yeah, I think it's not so much as a practical description of the actual act of meditation, whereas more changing your perspective of how you see yourself in this world, because that is what ultimately will be the most profound change. To change the way you see yourself in the world by knowing who you are, by practicing unconditional love, and by being a person of integrity and really thinking about how your actions, thoughts, and words affect the world around you. So becoming fully conscious of how you are engaging in the world and engaging in a more positive way with the world around you. So it is meditation in that ultimate form that we talked about the first time when you asked me what is meditation. It's about bringing that essence to every moment in your life. And the actual act of meditation is important, but you know, really living that on a moment-to-moment basis is what the book is all about.
Okay, yeah, that sounds great.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so thank you very much for the interview. I really enjoyed. Thank you very much.
You are very kind. Thank you very much, Devasatu. I really enjoyed speaking to you, and I look forward to more conversations in the...
Yeah, of course. Okay, good. Bye-bye.
Namaste. Thank you.